to GalacticConnection.com, one of the most popular blogs on the World Wide Web today for alternative news. Stay tuned for the latest information on our world shift from enslavement to galactic involvement, as well as current intel on any blockages impeding us from our sovereign birthright. Knowledge and self-mastery are key at this time. Our commitment is to present you with the latest breaking conspiratorial articles, off-world messages, exopolitics, cutting-edge technologies and sciences, and also an ever-significant intertwining of spiritual support and metaphysical scope that one needs to dive down the rabbit hole in search for truth with balance. We are truly on the horizon of a new golden age filled with the promise for more love, worldwide peace, and accelerated intuitive skills, where every living being can exist in cohesion and abundance. It is whatever we envision and dream this new world to be. I say to you now, let's redefine the new world to the beginnings of our own precious heaven on earth. Galactic Connection is here to provide the pulse of Mother Earth through an eclectic range of interviews each Tuesday afternoon from 3 to 4:55 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, Station 2 on BBS Radio, expanding your perspectives on how we can once and for all take back our freedoms, our joy, and our connection with our mighty I Am presence. Our intention remains true to connect hearts and minds everywhere in order to obtain global unity and galactic and universal acceptance. Our discussions will continue to cover anything to do with galactic society and our involvement with our galactic brothers and sisters. Our guests are experts in their fields, and our radio shows have been coined as some of the most thought-provoking out there. In addition to our daily blog, which runs 365 days a year, we also offer a realm of healing services such as our world-renowned implant removal processes, our spiritual past life clearings, our galactic violet ray alchemy from Alexandra, who shares in the lineage of Merlin, and other cutting-edge healing technologies. Check our site out at galacticconnection.com now. Sending you a wave of light, love, and inspiration, and a personal hug and thank you for listening to our Galactic Connection radio show and visiting our blog today. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Alexandra Metters of GalacticConnection.com, and today is a pre-recorded interview for November 15th, 2016. And before we dive into the interview with Shane, who's sitting over on the other side of the screen, I just want everyone to really go within and feel just the incredible depth of release and rejuvenation that's going on this planet. I just received more information this morning as to some miraculous, and I'm going to use the word miraculous, even though we all know that everything's possible, with the clearings that are going on within planet Earth. You may have felt this yesterday, in particular, Sunday, November 13th, was an incredible day of freedom for Mother Earth and beyond. So I just want to give everybody a heads up. If you're feeling a little bit withdrawn, you're not feeling like you really want to hang out with people, you're really feeling pensive, maybe you're feeling a little bit of sadness, maybe some anxiety, maybe some overwhelm, this is all part of it because we're releasing with her. And we're releasing a lot of stuff that's been stored within the planet for a very long time within her own consciousness, which is also ours. So just give yourself a break. Take it easy this week. This is going to be a pretty intense ride through the rest of the year. And just take a big, deep breath. Now, with that said, I also want to introduce everyone to our new product, which is the Divine Blueprint Reset. I am super excited about this. Jeff Godfrey received some incredible guidance to put this together with me. And check that out. It's on the right column of the website. We also have the organic realignment with Sophia, which is incredible, a totally different type of experience with Jeffrey Rosenberg, and it's also being implemented through sound healing. He's just exquisitely talented, so check those two new new releases out. They are really worth your while. Okay, so, gee, other than that and the regular stuff, y'all know about us being a renowned, world-renowned implant removal series process offering. Just check out all the other things. We've got so many new things coming up, I can't even keep everything straight. Now, I also want to preface this interview by stating that I have had a severe ear infection. And so I am like only hearing out of one ear. So if I ask Shane, what did you say? Be patient with me. Okay. So Shane, thank you for your patience and thanks for coming on. And I want everyone to know that the way that I met Shane was I put the call out on June 28th for all of the Galactic ambassadors that were drawn to working with Galactic Connection to come forward, and he did so. And in interviewing, I'm going to use that word with parentheses, quotations, because it really wasn't interviewing, but in reviewing with Shane, I was so fascinated by his humility as well as his information. And he mentioned to me that he has a lot of information that he'd like to share with the ground crew. I tapped in with Spirit. And in fact, it turns out Shane and I are on some of the same councils. So isn't that interesting? And he is here to deliver some information, not only on a very important message for the entire crew and planet, but also I think it'd be really interesting to hear his story. Now, Shane is going to talk to us a little bit about his experiences being up on the ships and also on the satellite facilities that he works on during the Dreamtime state. And as you know, this is actually becoming the reality state for a lot of us. So, Shane, do me a favor and just start out by telling us a little bit about what is your background in spirituality and, you know, time travel, astral travel. I mean, did you have a lot of experience in this area?
No, not really. No. I've had glimpses into what could or should happen, but that's not it.
Okay. And so you mentioned with great esteem your grandfather. And you mentioned that he's been kind of training you for a long time. Now, when did all of these experiences start where you were actually starting to recall your Dreamtime travels?
See, that's kind of tricky because they don't have no time up there. And it's kind of hard to track time down here since, you know, it's being...
Yeah, so you're not really sure.
No. Not the month and the date, but they contacted me. I did not. I contacted them, but they contacted me.
And so, well, I mean, when did you actually kind of start realizing that this was happening?
The first time they brought me up to the ship.
And when was that?
Probably second month or third month of the year. I'm not very sure what time it was.
Wow, so you're really saying like you're totally out of space and time because this is starting to happen to you all the time.
Right.
That's amazing. Can you tell us a little bit about your grandfather? You mentioned his name is Samantha. You're not referring to Sananda. You're actually referring to Samantha?
No. Sananda, which is Jesus, which is my blood relative, the 55th grade. Descendant. I'm related to him.
And the number 55 is very significant, is it not? And you mentioned that you're a diplomat.
Right, I'm a diplomat plus India up at the satellite.
And you mentioned you're on many councils. Can you tell us a little bit about the councils that you participate in?
I'm three councils right now. I might be on four. There is the led by the Senate, which is run by the whole satellite. Then there's the diplomatic corps, which is called the inner circle, which is basically the circle of light, or what they call the council of light. And then I am also part of the what they call Rosebud, which is also it's a thing to bring food and diplomatic services to the people of the galaxy.
Wow. So tell me, when you're pulled up to the ship, who are you doing it on your own, or does somebody come and get you?
Well, it's kind of complicated, really. More of the first time I went up there, I got on my ship, but now they have a separate body for me up there.
Whoa. Okay.
I just remember this episode because they've been giving me knowledge enhancers up there.
Okay, and don't you have to go through some sort of experience where you have to clean yourself off or go through some sort of energetic shower or something?
Yeah, decontamination. That usually happens when we travel.
Oh, so it's during the travel stage. Interesting.
Right.
Now,
what we do is decontamination, and then we wait for a soft five count, and then a soft hard five count to go through. And then we go wherever we're supposed to go, and then after that, we come back, and then we get decontaminated, health check to make sure everything's okay.
That's interesting. And
why we do that is because of safety reasons. Because one didn't have the five, and they got splinched. They were coming through the portal on the other way, and they lost their arm.
They lost their arm?
Yeah.
Whoa. Now, how would that show up in the physical? Is it literally the loss of an arm, or is it...
The body materializes on the other side of the plane of the portal, or the gateway of the Stargate, as you like to call it. So basically, if they go through, their arm goes through too. It's just, it materializes. It materializes before the body lifts, which is kind of awkward.
Got it. Now, the individual that lost their arm, were they able to come back intact, or...
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
He's not really
but it can be really jolting, is what you're saying, and very damaging to the physical vessel if you don't do it properly.
It can be, but we wear suits where it makes most of the journey. A normal human couldn't go through the process unless their DNA was registered to the Stargate itself. But... the suits we use regulate half most of the energy when we go through the Stargate.
That is fascinating. Now, tell me a little bit. You mentioned that one of the reasons that you started connecting with a lot of your galactic connections was because you were just feeling really lonely on planet Earth, right?
Right. Yes. Right.
And you just called out. So can you tell us a little bit about that story as far as how you first got visited?
What happened was I found something online to call for aid, and then I got really depressed one day, and I called out, and this is usually what happens. And I got a voice in my mind that told me wait for 1 month or 1 week. And then I waited, and he actually showed up and did the whole process, which was odd because I was sleeping at the time, and he woke me up. So
you have full recall. Like, as soon as you wake up in the morning, I mean, are you waking up kind of groggy and out of your body, or does it take you a while to...
It's more like partial recall, basically.
Okay.
So it's downloaded in my body. I just don't remember until, like, hours later, and I'll be working out, and, like, it's there, you know.
So you'll have a realization of where you've been,
right?
What you've been doing. The part that interested me too was you mentioned how you were called out by a king, kind of a king elf and a reptilian, and right. most most people would say, uh-oh, you know, the reptilians, you know, they're like the bad guys, or they're the people that have been so hostile towards the human race. And I'm often reminding people that there are reptilians out there that have assisted us greatly. So can you tell me a little bit about the reptilians that you ran into?
Yes, they're part of the Draco system. They come from a green planet. Basically, what happened was they were like us, but they're more of a worm-like race. And half of the people that work with me are either engineers, scientists, or diplomats. So she was the scientist, and she took a real machine. It's really hard to tell now from female from reptilians, of course. She took a liking to me as soon as I came up to the ship. I'm very sure that the guy that I met, and he denies it, of course, because he's like, well, it's not your information to know who I am, you know. But the whole thing was that she's been the very first ET that I met, and the very first person that's always around to make sure that I'm okay and everything's going well.
Interesting. So they weren't. So the reptilian that you ran into was not warlike and was not hostile.
No, none of them were.
And are these a reptilian like faction that's working with the Allied forces?
Yeah, they are. They're great colonists.
Okay. Are they? Is it kind of like the Alpha Centaurians?
I don't know. There's a lot of aliens going out and from the satellite, so I really couldn't tell you.
Okay.
All I know is it has to be power stations.
They have power issues?
Well, it's not more than power issues. It's just backups and fail safes just in case something happens.
Right. Well, that's funny. So tell us, you have so many, a copious number of stories, and I know you've met a lot of different types of star families,
right.
But I think the first question everybody wants to know is, you mentioned how you kind of come to, you remember, at least have memories of being on a satellite. So can you explain exactly what you mean by that?
But the process is quite easy, actually. What they do is they take a part of you, basically not your soul, but your DNA, and then what happens is they link it to your other body, and then they make a copy of it. And then as soon as I go to sleep, I move from this body to the other body.
Okay. Now,
it would be impossible to explain under normal human circumstances.
And so that's what you call a satellite?
The satellite's organic. It changes constantly. It's always moving, constantly changing. The first time I went up there, it looked like Death Star. The huge thing from Star Wars, Star Trek.
Yeah.
It changes all the time. I mean, my experience can be different from somebody else's. Completely different.
Yeah. That's true. I've yet to meet anybody that has identical experiences going up to their starships, et cetera. They're all very varied. So tell me a little bit about, you know, getting back to the beings that you've met, and you mentioned that you're a diplomat. Explain to me what is it like to participate in a council?
We all have equal footing, equal ground. Even the chairs are the same height, which is kind of impossible because some of the alien creatures that I met are even bigger than I have to be. They're 15 foot, even higher than my head. I mean, higher. I have to look up them in order to speak. Some of them are telepathic. Some of them speak English. Some of them show images of what's going on. And in the council, whoever needs service is also located in the local hotel. But there's always somebody overseeing the council. So there's meetings as a diplomat from Earth only. There might be more diplomats, I don't know, from Earth, because I haven't met anybody up there besides like one person. There is the head elder council member, which they call their elder. Everybody calls their elder. She's kind of like a female version of Yoda, basically. There's always an angel and a light master always over the council as well.
Wow. Now, you said something, I thought you wrote that you don't see that many humans when you go to the council meetings. You just see a lot of galactic beings, right?
There's not very many humans up there.
Okay. And are most of the people that are attending the council, are they like, is it part of like a galactic, what we would call a military arm? Or is it just more of a peacekeeping operation? How would you describe it?
Peacekeeping. I mean, we carry weapons just in case something goes on the other side of the gateway or the Stargate. But we were told that we're here for diplomatic mission only, and we were told not to. And this is where the divide between the newer ETs and the older ones have kind of a scuffle, is between non-human contact and human contact.
That really makes a lot of sense. So when you say the old ETs versus the new, how would you distinguish between those two?
The newer ones are half-breeds, and the older ones are thousands and thousands of years old.
Okay. And you mentioned that you met with the insectoid races. Have you met with the praying mantis, the mantids?
We have mantises, spiders, ants.
Well, the ant people, I've heard about the ant people too. I've heard they're really nice.
They are.
They're real loving.
They are, but the whole thing is...
Didn't you get, I mean, when you kind of came to and recognized where you'd been the night before, because apparently this is happening to you all the time now, weren't you like freaked out?
Oh, no. They have, what it is they have, there's no need to be scared up there because there isn't any. It's in the fifth dimension, so there is no fear. There's no hostility. It's more of basically, this is my point, and while she's with some of the other races are like, I want this done now, and I want it done as soon as possible. But there is no, I've never seen a fight out there ever.
Well, especially if it's a peacekeeping operation, huh?
Right.
You know, it's a little different than some of the other councils that I hear all about, you know, where they can really get into, I'm not going to say they're fighting, you know, because there's no physicality, but they can really get into disagreements about where they think we should be going with the ascension process. But I would imagine at this point, we've moved in such a progressive, you know, move and directive, we're doing a lot better these days, you know.
I'm really happy with us and where we are taking it there. It's just the worst reason we fight so much.
Okay. Do me a favor though, speak up for me because I'm serious. I'm only working on one ear. So, now tell me a little bit about the different types of races that you've interacted with, you know. So, you told me about the reptilians and how they have some power issues, but what about the mantids? You know, what's your experience been with them?
Mantids are kind of they're for inner peace and like inner love, but the whole thing is they tend to if you're not, they're more merchant type, and there's more merchant type aliens than there are diplomats. You know, different, like, how can I explain it? There's a different insectoids for different races, for different regions, for different parts of the planet, and each one's like different, like the United States. Like, if I walked to China, you know, somebody would be different than in the United States.
Okay. It's no different. We're no different. right? I mean, there's just like towns within cities, within, you know, countries within, yeah. Interesting. And what has been your favorite race?
I get along with a lot of the athletes, like half human, half alien species, a lot. And some of them are, can be gray and half gray, half something else. Or they can be any other half race. And they're a lot more brilliant than people think they are.
Oh, I bet. And what do you feel is the reasoning behind the hybridization?
They want to know everything about humanity. I mean, everything. As soon as I went up there, I mean, I have to have a detail wherever I go. And I'll be able to sit down and talk to some of them, but there's just so many of them up there that, you know, I can't. You can't accommodate everybody.
And so, like, when you say there's so many of them, I mean, are you talking thousands or tens of thousands or?
Probably tens of thousands coming in every day.
So, I mean, we're talking a lot of people, a lot of beings. How do they see humanity right now?
Some of them want to trade with humanity for goods and technology and services. Other ones of them want to go down and basically have this all done. And then some of them don't really care about what's going on as far as the Earth is concerned. And,
oh my God. And now you also mentioned that there were stories of you were tested.
Right.
Now, can you tell me a little bit about that? How were you tested in order for them to determine to bring you on board or to bring you within this, I don't know, this council or whatever?
Tested with a child.
Make sure you speak up, Shane.
Well, basic aptitude test that you give a child, but there's like tests to figure out where you're going to be. So first of all, they had me put blocks in a hole, but unfortunately they had a square one went around where you'd be, and I got frustrated, so I basically melted the whole block before it fit into the hole. And I didn't know how I did that, and they can't really explain it either, how I do things the way I do up there.
So that basically meant you won the test.
There were two other tests as well. There was a morality test, and more to test to see if I could actually build a Stargate unit functioning up there.
Yeah, and I haven't even gotten to that. So basically, you were recruited to be one of the main people to repair and activate, you said, the Stargates. And this is on planet Earth, right?
Right, planet Earth and other galaxies as well.
Okay. So not just here, but everywhere.
Yes.
Okay. And you don't even, like, have you ever been a really scientific person?
Sort of. I understand how quantum physics works, but that's about it. And that's what makes me actually start to actually work is quantum physics.
Interesting. And it's true, right, that every Stargate has, like, a number sequence associated with it?
Yes. It's number, location, where you're at, it's location, then star cluster, where you're at in the star cluster, and then where you're going in the star cluster, and then your DNA.
And your DNA. Interesting. That would make sense. So your DNA would be a key as to whether you could even access that gate.
Right.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. And now, there's supposedly a lot more Stargates on planet Earth than we know about, right?
Right.
And a lot of them, do you agree that a lot of them right now are just kind of dormant?
There's several of them that are working, but if you were a normal person, you wouldn't know what to look for. unless you knew what to look for.
Well, and I've been told as well that that it's not the right time to deliver that information to the ground crew.
Right, it's not time for. I mean, we use them all the time.
Yeah.
So this is honest. But the whole problem is that as soon as we use them, we have to use a cloaking technology. We just can't appear in the middle of New York and say, "Hey, I'm here." A whole bunch of ETs, because the people will panic, literally panic. So. The thing Russians had the whole time was they wanted to come down to Earth and liberate the people, and people are like, no, they're going to tell it.
So you're kind of part of like the security team for the planet, right? In a way? I mean, because from what I also understand, the Stargates, you know, a lot of really benevolent ships hover around the Stargates, but also some of the ones that are not necessarily, like the intruder races, are hanging out at those Stargates also.
Right.
So I would imagine you have to have technology to be able to quarantine the intruder races so that they can't gain access into this space, right?
What's really interesting is half the technology we get is from Earth. It's from inner Earth.
That makes sense. Huh. So now, do you remember traveling to inner Earth?
Oh, yes.
So you've done that a lot?
Twice.
Twice. Okay, tell us a little bit about that.
We used the Stargate located in Alaska, which I don't know where it is. I just know it's off somewhere underwater.
Under the water?
Yeah, we took several ETs with us to the council meeting in the Earth, and I don't know where we went. I just knew it was somewhere in Hall Earth, in a meeting room somewhere, and we met the king and the princess, and that's about it. And then we talked for a while. We stayed a couple nights or days there, and then we went back to the satellite.
Interesting.
Time's not relevant when we go out there, so.
And so when you go into the inner Earth, what does it look like to you?
It's beautiful. I couldn't explain it to you even if I tried. It's crystals and lampposts and streets made of gold, and it's positivity everywhere. I mean, it's just beautiful. And there's enough room for everybody who lives out there. It's a huge, huge market and a huge castle, and then there's another castle above that castle, and it's incredible.
Wow. You just want to beam over there, you know? So how do you see, did you interact with the Agarthan Council down there?
I only ever interact with the royal, which would be his grandfather was named King, and he was named King. Basically, it's a family line, you know, kind of like Stewart or Smith or something like that, that's passed down from generation to generation. Unless it's the male version of it. It's not the female line, it's the male line.
Interesting. Now, you also said that you've had travels to Camelot.
Yes.
Now, have you done that many times, or?
Once with my grandfather, once with a dragon.
With a dragon, wow. Now, a lot of people are feeling that Camelot is kind of like it's not of this world. It was never really of this dimensional level. And some have even alluded to the fact that it's part of the Lyra star system.
It's really, no, it's Uranus. And it might be on Lyra too, there might be another Camelot on Lyra. I have no idea. But the whole thing is, when I was there, it was somewhere in England. And you can see it within the room of 50 from Steve. You have passed him by through the castle. Like it was not neither here nor there.
Whoa. Wow. That's a whole new concept.
Right.
And you also said you hooked up with King Arthur.
Right, King Arthur and Merlin.
And so what was that like?
King Arthur is different, I have to say that. And
what do you mean by that? You're so nice about it. I have to say he's different, and that's about it.
Well, how do you explain a king? He's really regal when he wants to be, and sometimes he's a big kid, you know. And it's the same way with Merlin. He's really into technology. I mean, really into technology. Airplanes and spaceships and whatever he can read on, he'll read on about it. And he has models and it's just incredible. I mean, he has all sorts of stuff in his workshop.
That's interesting. And you didn't run into Guinevere?
No. In the court, usually when the Lightmasters meet, there's only a few women that actually attend the meeting. And if they are, it's more of their Lightmasters and they're treated such as equal footing. No one's higher or lower than anybody else.
Right. Thus the round table, you know? And now you said a dragon took you. So how'd you hook up with the dragon? Did it just show up to your house in your sleep state?
I was working on something in the satellite in my room. And it just appeared at my window.
You are so blessed to be able to have such detailed recall, really. Because this is what all of us are craving for. You know, it's awesome. So you also mentioned a Senate.
Right.
Now talk to us a little bit about the Senate. That sounds very Roman-like.
Oh, the Senate is what it is. If each person gets their own time to speak, and you get a schedule. And if they get more time, they can buy more time with, like, favors or trades or whatever. And they view their opinions. And what's really interesting is it's not attached to anything. So if you want to talk to someone, you just push a button on your console and you go out in the middle of the room so everybody can see you.
So is it like a big amphitheater?
Basically round.
Been there. Because that's ringing a bell with me. And
Star Wars, actually it's modeled after Star Wars, and it's, if they're really into Star Wars and Star Trek, it's not even funny.
So do you feel that by your experiences with this, has it become really clear that the beings that you're running into are also like aspects of us down here, or are they do they feel to be something completely different than who we communicate with down here?
They're completely different.
Okay.
They're more of we will do anything for you as long as it serves the greater good. It's all the great good up there. You're never wanted for anything and need anything up there. It's, you know, always wonderful of going up there every single time.
That's so cool. And when you arrive on the ship, who greets you?
It's more of we all have our separate rooms or staterooms, or some of us live together. And when we wake up, we get ready for the day, and then we grab our clipboards and get going. So basically, Monday, I'll go down and work on engineering if they need engineering or if they need a diplomat on the council, I'll be a diplomat. And then Tuesday, I will go to school there, because they have school. And I learned in school how to basically, most of the teachers make fun of me at this because I interact with most of the children and I'm an older person. And they make fun of me because I don't even know how to project. I don't know how to teleport. I don't know how to move things with my mind. So basically they say that I'm a child, but I am also an adult as well. So.
But when they make fun of you, it's in a loving way, right? Yeah, that's what I thought. So you're learning in the schooling, you're actually learning to get your gifts back, right?
Learning telepathy, how to speak through the mind, how to move stuff. Also, it's more of an exchange for the younger people to understand where we all come from as well.
Right, right. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of that going on. People are starting to remember sitting in classrooms where they're being taught what is the true history of this planet.
And they have a library, a huge library of anything you ever want to learn as well.
That's crazy. That's awesome. So, okay, so what happens on Wednesday? Do you have any other special days that you go places on the ship?
Mostly it's more of work than anything else. And it's written by the overseer or the elder, and she decides what everybody does.
Now, when you refer to the elder, Shane, are you talking about the elder of the whole ship, or are you talking about the elder of the council? Who, you know, be more specific.
Both.
Both? Okay.
As far as I was told about the history of the ship and the people that have been there, the sectoids have been there for longer. And then the reptilians showed up after the sectoids, and they told me that the only person as soon as they got on the ship or the satellite, if they like to call it, as soon as they got on the ship, the only person there was the elder. That's the only person that was on the ship.
Wow. Because I know the ships are, it's a different way of thinking about it, but the ships are actually like a state of consciousness, right?
It's more of an inorganic thing that likes to change all the time on what you're thinking of. And it's any of the technology up there.
That is so cool. So tell me about, like, what are you eating?
Whatever we eat on Earth, we can eat there as long as we know what it tastes like, smell like, look like through the food processors they got up there.
So it's like the food replicators we've heard about, right?
But these are more way more advanced.
So I can imagine, is the room, like, is it a room with a bunch of tables and everybody's just eating, like, their own thing?
It's basically a whole cafeteria.
Whatever they want, right?
The whole problem I have with that is, and I've complained, talked about it before, is some of us just forget to reset the machine after they're done with it. You have a burger that tastes like octopus.
That is hilarious. Okay, so everybody's eating their own type of food that's intrinsic to their own culture.
Right.
What a trip. So, okay, so have you sat down and eaten with the reptilians?
Yeah, I've sat down and eaten with the reptilians.
And what do they eat?
They eat live stuff. I mean, live stuff. It's like the reptilians, the best thing I could tell you about the reptilians is they're kind of like the Klingons on Star Trek. Is they are basically protein and live animals and stuff like that, you know. But it's not live anymore. It's more of creating through the machine as the live thing.
Oh my God. And then what about the praying mantis? What do they eat?
I've never seen actually what they eat because they usually eat in their stalls, or it's usually something like noodles or something like that, or some, you know, something like that.
Minerals?
Minerals or something like that. You know.
What a trip.
I know the ants like lots of sugar. I mean, just tons of sugar.
Sugar?
Sugar. Like tons of it. If it has sugar in it, they go well over it.
Wow.
So the first time I went up there, you know, when I was able to look around, because I was able to look around to see the free, you know, free meal, I was told to stop for a minute because they have a donut shop up there, or a bakery. About every Monday and Friday, if you're up there, I suggest you not be by the donut shop at a certain time in a certain place, because you will be trampled. And there won't be a single sugar bun left in the whole bakery.
That is hilarious. That is hilarious. So what about drinking? I mean, do you guys drink water up there? Is it just what you desire, or is it just what the body needs, or?
Well, as an engineer and a Stargate person, they usually have us on some sort of mixture. I don't know what it is. It's like a combination between a drink and like a taste. And it's really good, but the problem is you burn so many calories up there that you have to constantly eat hour after. You have to eat. You have like certain meal breaks where you have to eat, or you'll pass out, basically.
Wow.
Because there is no byproduct from the meals up there at all. There's no pellets up there.
So you're just burning it off really fast.
Right.
Interesting. And you working on Stargates now, are you finding yourself, are you traveling on both sides of the gate? So is your body going through a lot in order to do that?
You have to. In order to activate one side of the Stargate, you have to activate the other, because you take two crystals in order to activate. The problem is the crystals have to be handled. They have to be frozen. And they have to be handled by two people with a metal box, because this is not. You drop one of those things, it'll create a black hole.
Whoa.
Right? They're really unstable with quantum energy.
Wow.
So you have to be really careful in order to do that. Usually we don't like traveling through the Stargates if we don't have to. And the way we activate them is we activate one, the main portal in the Stargate, and then travel by ship. And what they have right now is a new quantum drive that I've actually, that they're working on right now, that supposedly I came up with. And when I came back, they gave me the idea.
Wow.
It does just move. Okay, let's say you have an elephant weighing 1,000 pounds, right?
Okay.
All you have to do is move that matter from one place to another. So if you have the exact same mass on Earth, all you have to do is delete that mass from Earth and put it on Mars.
Well, I believe anything's possible. I mean, we're so limited in what we think is possible down here. It should be that easy, huh?
And we tested a couple days ago. The only problem is that we're having trouble with the ships rematerializing. I mean, the ships will be there. It's just they have trouble being ships. They're totally invisible.
Interesting.
So you'd be out in space piloting. You can't see the controls. You can't see the instruments. And like until like an hour or 5 minutes later. It's usually 5 minutes later, because usually the problem corrects itself. But sometimes it's kind of like, I have to wait until the ship reappears before I can do anything.
What a trip. And you must actually really look forward to going to sleep every night.
Oh, sometimes. Yeah, most of the time I do.
I was going to say. So, okay, back to the Stargates. So when you're working on the Stargates, you're primarily working with crystals?
Yes, crystals.
Okay. And I know that just from my own experience, it's very important to work with their configuration, like sacred geometry and their frequency and things like that. Is that primarily what you're doing?
Right.
Okay.
What happens is I put the quantum energy in the crystals, and then another person with better ears than I have, mostly a technoid or somebody that has better hearing, usually adjust the frequency of the crystal.
Makes sense.
And then immediately after the frequency is set, it is frozen.
Got it.
Stable after that, unless it's frozen. And then it's immediately put into another stargate.
Huh. So how many stargates do you think you've already worked on so far?
Hundreds?
My God. Okay, so now, isn't it true that if there's a stargate here that resides on Earth, that it's going to have automatic doorways to specific locations other places on the planet?
In the memory of the stargate, yes, if it's been used before. But if you want to go from a stargate located on Sirius B to Earth, you could. So just more time to materialize.
Interesting. And I've been told that there are a lot of stargates here, but they've been deactivated until a certain time, and we have to have a certain level of consciousness to be able to activate it, to access them. Is that correct?
Yeah, there's one in Egypt, there's one in Atlantis, there's probably one in Tibet somewhere. There's probably one in Iraq that I've heard of. And I heard that somebody tried to activate it and it didn't work because they didn't have the technology to activate it.
Well, they also don't have the right intention.
Right.
You know, because there's a lot of dark factions trying to take over that. And they've been trying to take over it for a long time.
You know, the whole thing is with the dark factions as well, is if you have the intention of doing harm, and it's just like a tool, any other tool, things tend to come out of the stargates that you don't want to come out as well. So you have to be really careful on how you use them as well. You have to have good intentions in order to use them for good means. If not, it tends to get a little hairy.
Yeah. So you have to have really precise, clear, almost like no thought, just totally from your heart if you're working on the gates.
Right.
Makes a lot of sense, too. And now, how large is the crew of people that are working on the stargates?
I'd say up to 50 people.
50 people? Oh, my God. What a trip! Okay, well.
It's that much to make sure the crystals are in place, and it takes that much to actually rebuild the stargates that are broken down, that are no longer in function.
Now, when you say they're broken down, how does that happen? Does it get blown up by technology, or, you know, how does the stargate get broken down?
Some of it is the locational energy will be diverted somewhere else. Sometimes it'll be somebody doesn't want somebody to come through and they'll blow it up with quantum energy, and then you have a flux. And sometimes it's just so old and so forgotten technology that people just don't know how to repair them, and they just fall apart over time.
Wow. And I mean, when you're talking stargates, do you feel like what's the name of that show? SG-1,
but it's not like SG-1 at all. The whole thing is it doesn't click into place. It more like spins in a large circular motion.
Okay, so it's not like this. Almost looks like a water energy wall.
It is water when it comes out. It's more of quantum energy, which takes the form of water. But the whole thing is it spins instead of just staying in place.
Okay. And is it true that when they have to dial in the gate, they have to not only line up location, but they have a whole bunch of language of light symbols and things like this?
Right. And it can be used either by a huge keyboard or it can be used by a crystal controller that's strapped to your wrist.
Interesting. Wow. Well, I would imagine that we must be in a better place for they to ask you to come out and talk about this openly, right?
Right.
For it to be safe enough for you to talk about it now.
Yeah, it's as long as they don't divulge how to build them, they're perfectly fine with it.
Okay. And you have to, do you have to have your mind wiped when you're walking on the planet, or?
They tried that, but it doesn't work with me for some reason.
Okay. So that's why you made the test.
Well, it was the test, and it was another reason why as well. So.
They can't access your information. That's cool.
Right.
I was wondering about that. So, okay, so tell me a little bit about your sleeping quarters.
It was a small broom closet, but now it's a huge stateroom the control room, and then it's the Senate, and then the living quarters above that, down below that, and then below that is the marketplace /garden/library/gardens and places where you learn, and then below that is the ship bay, and below that are the engines and the engineering bay. And they're all run by clear tubes that go all the way up and down the whole entire ship.
What a trip. And then, okay, so basically it's like levels, right? Floors?
Right.
Okay. Now, what is the ship itself shaped like? Is it orb-like shaped, or is it actually shaped kind of like a V, or?
Round ball.
And it just kind of moves.
It moves on its own intent.
On its own intent. Now, the own intent doesn't have anything to do with all the beings that are inside the ship.
One time it moves wherever you want it to move.
Okay, wait. So if you want it to move somewhere, but somebody else wants it to move somewhere else, are you both going to have completely different experiences?
It could be. If you're another demon on the ship, yes.
And you mentioned that you used to be in a broom closet and you got moved to a larger room. Is that because you kind of like earned your stripes, so to speak?
No, it's more of there were more engineers. Willing to more people that wanted to be in the engineer corps, and they were running out of room to put them. So they needed another. The ship expanded, and their staterooms now.
Very cool. So let's talk about health. Okay, so do people get run down or get out of alignment, or what happens up there where you would actually not feel well?
There's several things like illnesses and face spores and all sorts of other things. But it's basically taken care of in the medical bay, which is like right underneath the living quarters.
Right underneath the living quarters. And are there healing chambers?
Yes.
Okay. And how do those healing chambers work?
Basically, they use light and crystals to heal you.
Okay. So we have a similar technology here on planet Earth. Is it pretty much one and the same?
Yeah, but it heals everything, though. It cleans your body and your blood and your everything.
So if you lost a limb, it could recreate the limb?
As long as you have DNA to recreate it, yes.
Oh, that's so cool. Now, you brought up something I was going to bring up, which is the Space Wars. And there's an awful lot of... a lot of information out on the internet that there's still a lot of intense war going on. Who do you feel that is primarily between?
Basically, the light forces and what's left of the dark, basically.
Okay. And who do you determine is the dark? Like, who do you feel is the dark, or that you've learned up there is the dark?
Basically, beings that have no service to self, basically.
Okay.
There was a group that we had escort to the sun that was taking advantage of other people. What they do is they go to the planet and they're called the...
intruder races?
Something like that. I can't remember what their names were because it was a long time ago. But they were a bunch of bakers proposing this trade program, and what they do is they go and, oh, you guys need this and this and this. We'll charge it to you on your Galactic account. But as soon as they did, their interest went so high that they eventually owned the planet.
Wow.
And the people were slaves. So what we did, we were told to go arrest every single one of them and have them run his son. So we for their souls to be repurposed, because there was no way that, you know, they had their own army and everything else as well. You know.
So. I'm familiar with what you're talking about. Now, do you feel that there is still war going on up in Mars?
Skirmishes, light skirmishes, but it's nothing too vital that we have to worry about up here. I mean, there will be fighting always, because there will always be darkness out there somewhere, anywhere, you know.
And do you agree that there are more planets like Earth-like that have the same types of challenges, where intruder races are trying to take advantage of them and they're basically trying to use their DNA?
Oh yeah, there is. There was a planet that was a long time ago that I can tell you about, and what their planet name was Terra. And what they did was they had a big war with the intruders and they wiped every single one of them out. But that was deleted from their logs because they wanted to go positive instead of negative. So what they did is they started, basically, their whole culture is based off of what they call the rock. And what they do is they build their ships around this rock, the rock of their planet, and they take the rock with them.
Wow.
And these are huge ships. But not as big as the dreadnoughts from the galaxies that I've seen.
What a trip. I think David Wilcock talked about the progenitors. Have you heard about them? They're like 50-foot beings. They're on the dark side of the moon.
I have met with their beings, though.
And they're not very nice, apparently.
No, I haven't been to it lately. I've been to a planet where the original Martians were, but I've never been to the moon or Mars. I just heard about it from a satellite.
Yeah. So you're taught a lot of the galactic history, right?
Right.
And yeah. Do you agree that there was a Big Bang?
It matters what race you talk to. Everybody believes that everything was created from everywhere, from source. And that's what we believe up there.
Okay. And still, it still applies that nothing can be created nor destroyed. It just is.
Oh, it just is.
Okay. Interesting.
You tend to get angry if you destroy something that's not supposed to be there.
Wow. And so the ship itself that you're on, it's comprised, you mentioned, it's comprised of a lot of different kinds of, I'm going to say, dimensional beings, right? Like all different kinds of dimensions. So are you able to know that when you meet them, where they're from, what dimension they are in? Is it like something you can see?
No, not really.
It's, okay.
More of where I'm at right now is the fifth dimension. And the way I can tell it is mostly all of them are higher sentient beings. There might be lower ones that we come across every day, but the lower ones are even more sentient than we are. It's a race, but yeah. So,
say that again, the lower what?
The lower races are more sentient than we are.
Okay, that's what I thought you said. Okay. And now, how high up in dimensionality does this ship hold certain beings?
It can go all the way up to, it can go up to whatever dimension you want it to go up to.
Wow. That's that, wow. I've been told that the Space Wars are involved in at a very high dimensional level. Do you agree with that?
what I've heard, 9th or 10th level, yes.
Up to the 10th level. Yeah, I've heard the same thing. Interesting. So now tell me, what do you wear? Are you just like naturally you come to and you see yourself in like a kind of like a star suit?
Whatever you want to wear, you can wear up there.
But I would, whatever you want to wear?
It's basically whatever you want to wear, you can wear up there. But I wouldn't suggest wearing Earth clothes up there because the very first time I went there, I was outfitted with a pair of sneakers. 2 minutes later, I had somebody trying to buy my shoes from me.
Interesting.
Right, because they're so interested in Black culture. The longer you have an item on you, the more valuable it is to them.
So there's actually like people trying to barter stuff. I mean, do they use, what is their means of exchange, I guess, is the question I'm trying to ask.
Basically, whatever they want, whatever you have that they want to barter for, and if they think it is worth more than it is, they will give you more than it is.
Wow. So Star Trek and Star Wars are very accurate in their depiction of what goes on.
Right.
Amazing. And now back to, you said something about you had met Martians?
Yes.
Did you meet Martians on Mars or did you meet them on the ship?
I met them on the ship and then they traveled to the planet and then I came back with them.
Interesting. And do they have a story to tell about what actually happened to Mars?
Mars dried out.
Dried out?
Basically, yeah. They had to leave because there was no more water on it. They were a water-based race, and they had to leave.
But didn't that happen because of a galactic, like a nuclear strike against the planet?
It could have. I don't know about that.
Okay.
They were very vague about that. All they said is they traveled through the stars by some means of a spaceship with water in it. And they travel to another planet outside our galaxy that has water. That's the only thing the Grand Elder would tell me when I was there.
Interesting. So what do you feel that the majority of the star races are looking for in a planet? Are they looking for water? Because I heard, you know, the reason I asked that, everybody, you probably think that's a ridiculous question, but some star races, they don't need the same things we need.
Right. Water is valuable, a valuable trait, but it's not exactly needed. There are certain races, but most of them do drink water. Water is valuable, no matter what.
Interesting. And what about minerals?
Crystals are very valuable up there.
Okay.
But it's more of, they use them for medicinal purposes, either for eating or some of them will eat them, and some of them will use them for healing purposes.
Interesting. And of course, the crystals are used probably to, with those tubes, right? Are they used to power up the ship at all?
There is a crystalline 0-point energy drive, but they only use it as a backup.
Only as a backup. So it's like a power backup.
Right. It filters energy from, there's three energy filters. There's one on top, there's one on the bottom, which uses the drive, and then there's another one that uses quantum energy now.
Okay. And then, now the ship itself, does it travel as a kind of an armada with other ships?
It can, if there's other ships with it, but right now it's stationary.
Stationary. And what determines it to be stationary?
It just doesn't go anywhere.
The reason I ask that is, are they receiving directive from some other being or elder or council or whatever, telling them where, okay, you need to go here next?
No, it's all pretty well.
Okay.
Sometimes the social pop in and talk to them and tell them what to do.
Okay, so I think, can you describe the planet, for example, going back to Camelot? Can you describe what it looked like?
Medieval. There were more trees back then, I guess. It's like living, it was between like Robin Hood's day and like, it wasn't like exactly, it's hard to explain really. It's like, there had more trees back then, but it was more, it was clean. Like, it wasn't part of the landscape, though.
Hmm.
It was more of a celestial realm than anything else.
I landed on somewhere where the sky was purple. And the trees were all talking. The blades of grass were talking. Everything was communicating. Have you ever experienced that?
No, not really.
It was absolutely incredible. It was beautiful. So,
the place I've been is, what is it, Sharing the Loft.
Yeah, so tell me about, that's the one I was going to ask you about, Shangri-La.
Shangri-La is really interesting. It was the very first travel that I didn't do through any other means.
Through a what?
It wasn't through the means I usually travel.
Oh, okay.
It was sort of a gateway or anything. It was just immediately I was meditating, and one minute I was here, and the next minute I was in Shangri-La.
Right on. And what did you experience?
The very first time I went there, it was very beautiful. And the problem is, the guard monk that I appeared in front of, I almost get a heart attack, so they weren't expecting me at all.
Wow.
I got to meet Samantha and Lady Mechline and basically most of the Masters of Light, actually. Buddha and Saint Germain, and there's a lot more Masters of Light than people know about.
Yeah, there's quite a few, huh? Thousands upon thousands, right? So that's where all the Ascended Masters hang out.
Right.
They say that in the IM teachings, too.
Right. They rotate once in a while. Once in a while, they'll hold it in Jesus' hometown. Sometimes they'll hold it in Shangri-La, El Dorado. We've had it in Camelot twice.
So cool. That's just so cool. So now you have felt super compelled to share a message with the world that you got from working on the ships and with the Stargates. Can you share with us what that message is?
The basic message is they want us to basically follow the Golden Rule and the Codex. If you know what that is. Basically love your neighbor as you would love yourself. Be in service to the light and be in one with the whole thing. Is being one with what your intent is doing. Be service to self instead of service to others.
Right on. That's a good message. And so all these different beings, how many beings are you kind of interacting with up on the ship, by the way?
Thousands
of different beings. That is amazing. So of all these different beings, they're all getting along.
Right.
That's just, you know, come on, man. That's exactly what we all want. And so what you're saying is that every single one of those races, they all have one thing in common, which is service to others.
Right. The whole thing is, sometimes the ship's not built for certain races. So you'll be on an elevator, and this is like the second time I went up there. You'll be on a, I was going up to the engineering bay to go to lunch. Right? And you stop in between living quarters, and this huge I don't know what to explain it. It was like this green thing got into the elevator with us, and we're like, no, no, it's full. We can't have any more. And it freaking squashed itself in there. And as soon as we got off the elevator, it was just covered with green goo all over the place because it just leaves it all over.
What a trip.
Right? And there's beings that, the interesting ones that I met are the angels and the energy beings. And the really interesting one that I met, which was really interesting, well, two of them, is the Galaxians, which I met a couple of days ago. And then there's the jellyfish people. And what they do is they can't communicate. They can communicate with each other telepathically, but they have to have a surrogate in order to communicate with anybody else outside their body, because they don't have like ways of communicating, other ways of communicating the other way.
So you said that there's a surrogate. Is that kind of like, you probably have a lot of translators on the ship?
Right. It's sometimes the translators don't work exactly. So most of them like to speak English or speak through their mind through telepathy. Because the problem I found out was the translators don't translate 100% perfectly, because it was the sectoids and the reptilians. If you say something bad to a reptilian, they'll remember it forever. And the insectoids' voice palette is so complex that they have over 1,050 words for food.
Wow. For Thoth or Zeus?
What do you mean? Oh, the ant people, the insectoids. The ant people, insectoids. They have over 100 or 1,050 words for food.
Food. Oh, food. Okay. I thought you said Thoth or Zeus. That's amazing. Right. So the translators are not like the perfect fix, but it's close.
It's close to what they've got so far. And if you want to learn another language like reptilian or insectoid, which I give you good luck to trying to learn insectoid because it's literally impossible. I would say reptilian's mostly easier to learn than insectoid. And the problem with reptilian is you have to speak clearly and slowly and precisely, because if not, you say something that would likely offend them, and they're easily offended.
Interesting. So they're very, although they're of the light, they have similar personalities to those that we have been in conflict with here.
Right. But the whole thing is, if you show yourself loyal to them, like loyal as in strong and competitive, and like if you're like prove that you're the alpha male, they will correct you, but they won't push it any further. So you have to make sure that they know. The very first thing I was told by the reptilian that was being my guardian is you have to be rough with them. You have to be kind of like, not like a dictator, but more of, this is what I want, this is what I'm going to get, and this is how you're going to respect me. And if you don't respect me, then I ain't going to respect you. And basically, that's how it works up there with the reptilian. The other races are perfectly fine with service to self. It's more of, you know, sometimes, you know, the reptilians are, you know.
That's really interesting. So what about the Syrians? Now, what do the Syrians look like?
I haven't met too many Syrians. The only one I met is the one that brought me up there. They're more of laid back, do whatever you want, free will, you know. I've met several of them, but I haven't met, you know, a whole bunch of them.
Do they have, like, really big heads and skinny necks?
I guess so.
Okay. And then what about the Andromedans?
The Andromedans. I don't know if I met any Andromedans up there, really, telling you the truth.
Okay. What about the Lyrans?
Lyrans are the cat people, right?
Yeah, lions and cats.
They're really, really knowledgeable. I've met several cat SI people up there.
I love the lion beans.
Right. And there's different ones. There's lions and then there's jaguars and tigers and I even met a bear person went up there once.
That's so cool. And what about the vegans? Same?
Oh, I've never met those.
Never met a vegan? Okay, how about the Arcturians?
Arcturians, there's a lot of them up there. I mean, you bump into them once in a while. They're very kind.
And they're very, aren't they very scientific?
Yes, very scientific. I would say them and the Zaydens are very scientific when it comes to one will be more a seek of knowledge and the other one will go, I want to take part in this because I want to know how it works.
And then how would you describe an Arcturian?
They're all right.
Like, how do they look?
I don't know. I mean, I'm busy just repairing stuff, so I don't poke my
Oh my God, you're so funny. And have you ever seen a Tausetian?
I don't think so. Where are they from exactly?
Tauseti. Tausceti.
I don't think so.
And then the Procyons. No?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I've met a lot of beings in my time, and the whole thing is we don't label each other as like different races or stuff like that. It's more of us together. And I keep on saying us as more of family than anything else.
Well, you're right. It's just we're so curious. We want to understand, you know. Now, how does the central sun fit into this?
The central sun fits into it. The central sun is like the whole thing where every universe revolves around. And eventually our planet will be where the central sun is supposed to be.
So Mother Earth will, like, probably, what, burst into a big star, essentially, right?
What I'm told is we're traveling to the central sun.
Okay.
Most galaxies are traveling to the central sun.
Interesting. And
some of them are over there and some of them aren't.
So the ship that you work on, it travels through a lot of different sectors, right?
Right, a lot of sectors.
And I've heard there's like, what, quadrillions of sectors?
So basically, what's really interesting about that is it would be evolution would split at a certain part in a certain time. Like you'd have people that evolved from cats or evolved from apes or evolved from lizards or evolved from other beings entirely. And they're scattered all over the galaxy, throughout our galaxy and all sorts of other galaxies as well.
Yeah, I remember Sheldon Neidel said to me one day, if you can envision an insect or an animal, there is a race.
Exactly.
So I was like, wow, that's cool. That's really cool. So now you talked about the gardens and the libraries. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
The garden is basically built for anyone who wants to go and use the garden. And it has all sorts of different fruits and vegetables from Earth.
Nice.
And all sorts of whatever you can think of will grow there.
So you can just go in there and pick something that you want.
Right.
That's cool.
Or there'll be orders for a certain type of thing from the vendors, and we'll go get it.
And you'll go get it.
That's great.
And then you were really describing the library as just being unbelievable. Is it just because it's so gargantuous, or?
Well, thing is that it's hard to explain, but there's like one part of it's hollow, and then some of it's like visual, and then there's some of it that's like learning, basically.
Okay.
One time I was looking for a book on like a galaxy that we were trying to repair a Stargate for, and one of my friends wanted to know about what's in there, and he read in the book about Washington, and he used the visual scanner, but what he did is he forgot to put the back, well, the book out of the to cancel the book scanner. So you had Washington walking around the library quoting something.
What a trip.
Right.
So basically you can look something up and then actually create it into a physical form.
Right. Right.
Well, what happens if it's something that's not really positive?
There's nothing that isn't positive up there.
Okay. Okay, right, because the history that's up there is different than the history that's down here.
It's true history.
Aha. Okay. Interesting. And have you been taught and remember anything about the Galactic Wars? Is there anything you can share with us on that?
Not much. I just know that there were Galactic Wars, and they were big. And I know that I've worked on some of the ships that were through the Galactic Wars.
Wow.
They have, like, huge holes in them that have to be repaired, and they have to be refitted with the new engines, and they have to be refitted with the new living quarters, and it's just incredible to see these big old ships.
Are they bigger than what you're in?
Oh, yeah.
Way bigger. Oh, really?
What I call, there's like classes of ships. There's the scout ships that we use to go around, and then there's the carrier ships, the living ships, and then the dreadnoughts, which is huge, miles upon miles, huge ships that either carry thousands and millions of people on there at a time, or they can be used for defense as well.
And I've been told that they're so big that they would actually block the sun.
It's huge.
Yeah, I've been told that too. So, speaking of which, what are you hearing about the plans for the future with, as we go through this ascension process, which we're in, what have you heard about the involvement of the ships and the landings?
What I've heard so far is what we've worked on is basically the calm down and the land and give us technology. And for a while, they'll go, and then they'll come back. And then they'll show us the ships and show us their Earth. And then after that happens, they'll start loading every single body up, even the animals, and leave the planet so it can be healed.
And leave the planet for what?
So the planet can be healed.
Oh, so it can be healed, right. Okay. I've heard the same thing. Okay, that's good. And how long are they suggesting that that's going to take?
Probably 2 to 3 months.
Okay.
For the planet to be healed.
Now, what about the stories that are all over the internet of people moving into inner Earth? Have you heard anything about that?
It could be possible. I mean, I know there's vast, vast oceans down there and seas. And I know there's plenty of room for everybody down there anyway. But it matters where you're going to be going and what you're going to be doing.
And what your mission is, yeah.
Right. exactly.
Yeah, that's a good point.
As far as I was told, we're no longer allowed, as soon as the planet is healed, we're no longer allowed to live on the surface of the planet anymore.
Yeah. That's interesting. That's a confirmation of some guidance that I got. Huh. That's a little bit down the road, though.
Right. I know that I've been told, and I think I know that there are human ships already landed on Earth. That are already here. It's just they're waiting for the money to go through. And as soon as the money goes through, everything's going to start happening really quickly.
And I was just going to ask you that I remember talking to several different people that they have actually found their own ship directly on the surface of the planet.
I don't know if you'll be able to approach them or not. I don't know. I don't know how that exactly works because of the way they are set up. It's the same.
Go ahead.
I know that their technology is way more advanced than ours is, so.
Yeah, fake? No kidding. So, since you are familiar with, of course, being part of the Christ bloodline and that kind of thing, what is your perspective on those that are on the on the ground floor, they're part of the ground crew, they're in connection with ships, and some of them are commanders. Is there any discussion about that?
They know that there are people down working on Earth that to improve Earth, and they're very happy on that. But we have little contact with the people on Earth. The only people that we've actually contacted was the Russians and maybe General, I've seen General Dunford up there once, and that's it.
Okay. Interesting. And is it of your opinion that Russia is now really leading the move for the planet to go into the light?
Russia has always been with the consumers.
Interesting.
And the reason why I know that is because my grandfather showed me, they had tons and tons and tons of files in like bunkers of files on everybody that has ever done anything bad to the Earth, ever.
Wow. Wow. Well, I just know Putin is a walk-in. He is amazing. So, is there any discussion about our election or anything like that, or do they just not really care?
They don't care.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not someone that is elected from the other side, they don't really care.
Yeah, I'm just going to say that. Okay. Wow. So what do you guys do for entertainment?
They watch movies up there, mostly Star Trek or Star Wars.
That just cracks me up. That just totally cracks me up. Okay, they watch Star Wars and Star Trek. Of course, it's a different technology, right?
Right. It's visual and
interactive.
It's more of like a play than anything else.
Wow, that's so cool. That would be so fun.
And they have like theater plays up there and everything else as well. They have this mantis, and they call him Manny the Mantis because he's over dramatic. And he does plays up there. And we did this before all this stuff happened. They were practicing for the event. And they were practicing the event itself up on the satellite. They had a holographic room set up for it. And I was the only human in that whole production of the event, and they were getting ready for it, you know, practicing for it. And we had to do several takes.
You didn't like that, huh?
Well, the whole thing was, the first time it was like, the ships came down and the guy was acting, Manny was acting like human. He's like, oh, the ships are coming down. But so I'd act like a normal human. And I have a friend, you know, an aunt friend, and he hangs around with me a lot. And he's sort of kind of happy, sort of.
Hybrid? And,
huh?
Like a hybrid? When you say half-breed, do you mean hybrid?
Hybrid. And when we were done, we were cleaning up, and they counted everybody, and they're like, oh, one person's missing. Well, unfortunately, he's taller than I am, and they put him in, like, one of those little, you know, little cars, and he got stuck in it, and he couldn't get out. What they had to do was cut the roof off and get him out of it. But the guy's a sweet part. He really is up there. I mean, he's the sweetest aunt you could ever meet up there. I mean, most of the insectoids are very sweet once you get to know.
The insectoid people are really sweet. That's great. And so when you're getting up out of your quarters to go to work every day, is there music playing or is everything telepathic?
Sometimes it's live music, and sometimes it's just a recording, or it could be music from the 1950s, it could be music from the 1970s, it matters what they want to listen to, really.
That's cool. And what's the normal kind of music that's played?
Earth music, basically.
Really? Wow. I'm surprised.
One time they had she was in a concert out there, but I didn't get to go to it because I was working on the engineer, working on the ships, and the tickets were sold out anyway. They had a live, like, had the Beatles, and they had Elvis, and they had, like, Prince up there playing. I mean, it was just, and they had angels playing up there once in a while, too.
Oh, my gosh, that must have been beautiful.
It was, you know.
Oh, man. So do angels appear the way we have been shown them to look like?
No, they're normal humans like us.
Okay.
They have wings, but they're more of, you can't see them, they're invisible.
But they're really strong, and they're real high beams of light. That's so cool. What about animals? Are there any animals up there?
There are, but it's more of for trade than anything else.
Oh,
so it's like an alien will trade like 50 cabbages from somewhere for like a six-legged cow, blue spotted cow.
Wow. And what? Well, for those, okay, you know, that's a question that I've even had people write in about. Is for those of us that are real animal lovers, like I have four dogs. What happens at the time that we take the big leap? Where are they going?
They're coming with us.
Okay, that's what I was wondering. So there aren't that many animals on the ship because it's a working ship, or?
There's animals up there, but it's more of like livestock than anything else.
Okay. Because it's more like a bartering merchant ship kind of environment. Okay.
The market is. Some people do have pets, but it's like pets from their home world that they bring.
Well, that must be a total trip.
Well, it's really interesting. There's people from water planets, and we had to build an aquarium for them because it makes them more accustomed to home.
Right. It's kind of like a zoo. That's what they do at the zoos. You know?
Our very first time we went up there, I woke up in my room and there was an octopus there and it had a tag around its neck. And I guess the guy went traveling to go find a water planet and brought me back an octopus.
Oh, my God. And now, when you're up there, are the octopus, are they communicating with you?
They can, but the problem is it's hard sometimes because you can get, like, a really finicky one. You know, kind of like a finicky cat. Oh, you should feed me more often because I'm hungry.
Okay, and so you're telepathically communicating with them.
Right, right.
Okay. What a trip. And nobody can really get away with lying, right? Because everybody's telepathic.
Right. They have at the council meeting, they have like an orb that as soon as you sit down at the table, you can't lie. You have to tell the truth 100% of the time.
Oh my God. What a trip. Well, I could just ask you question after question after question. What I would like to do is let the audience know, please feel free to submit some questions in for Shane. And Shane, if you're willing to, we can go ahead and see what the response is and go from there. Because it's really nice to meet somebody who has full recall of being on the ships with that much detail. It's nice. And now, is it possible if there's questions that you don't have an answer, can you get the answer and then come back?
Okay. The whole thing is they know more about what's going on Earth than I do.
Yeah.
They go up there once a week. They want to scan my memories on what's going down on Earth.
Right.
So they want to know what's going on. Politically, they don't care what's going on, but day-to-day, like, things that we do, they're very interested in.
And then, well, go ahead.
In the marketplace, they like mostly the Zadens, but other creatures as well. They like to buy Earth things because there's presents. But some of the requests can be like useless because it was like the Zaden who likes to take apart stuff. Because I remember a 1970s Chevrolet, you know, one of the classic, you know, roadster cars. And the elder's like, no, you're not going to get that.
That is just hilarious. Oh my God, that's too funny. What about games? Like, what do they do for athletics and sports and things like that?
I think there's games up there. I'm not sure. It matters how sentient the creature is. I played chess once with one of the spirit beings, and it got complicated quick. It was a complicated game of chess. I mean, really complicated. Like, different, like, levels and moving different, like, it was different.
Oh, that's cool. You did mention in your little blurb that you sent over to me that you have run into the avian, the blue avians?
No, the spear beings.
There's spear beings. Okay.
The spear beings that I ran into were 15 feet tall.
Whoa.
Yeah, they're kind of like corners sort of off of Star Wars. They look exactly like the corners off of Star Wars. And one of them's a scientist, and the other one's sort of like she's a biologist, sort of.
Huh. Interesting.
And the reason why I found them is because something went wrong with my DNA, and at the satellite, they couldn't detect it, but the spirit beings could. So they took me on their ship, and they fixed my DNA for me.
Right on. So basically, there's just really not a whole lot you guys can't do.
Right. Well, the whole thing was that she didn't like to see living things suffer. Well, and what she calls her mate, said, we should just leave them there and let the people of satellite figure it out. And she says, there's no time. He needs his DNA fixed now. So it's like, all right, go ahead, bring them to the ship. So the ship of the Spear Beings is 2 times bigger than the satellite that I've been in.
Wow. So, and they're, so I would imagine they have a lot of different beings coming from a lot of different sectors that need help with their DNA, right?
Right. Yeah, yeah. There's a lot. A lot of medical going through there, too. And a lot of the doctor that I only see one doctor that rotates, the other two rotate out. I've never seen the other two. But she's more of a, she's not reptilian, but I can't explain exactly what she is exactly. But she like has like bumpy orange skin and big eyes, you know, and she uses glasses to make them even bigger. She's more of a healthcare person, and she does some inventions as well. And she says, well, since you're up here, I'm going to test them on you.
Oh my God.
Right.
You're like, okay, what am I getting myself into?
Exactly. So most of them are for, you know, health reasons, you know. Like they have this bell disc that you put on your mouth, it cleans your whole entire mouth with the foam. And she's perfected it where it actually, where you don't have to clean your teeth ever again. You don't even have to brush your teeth. You just go to see her once a week or once a month, put the thing in your, and your teeth are perfectly clean.
Oh my gosh. And now that's up there. That doesn't apply down here, correct?
It doesn't apply down here.
Really?
Yeah.
So you never have to brush your teeth again.
Well, what the whole thing is about that is when I went to the dentist, the lady's like, your back of your teeth are really clean. And I don't brush very often. So I'm thinking that the two dimensions are starting to merge.
Right. I totally agree with that. Totally agree with that. So do you feel like they're getting ready for that merging?
Yes.
Okay.
They're teaching me how to get ready for it. That's why they have me in school, to train my mind, so when it comes to the time when we go into fifth dimension, I won't be totally, totally not knowing what I'm doing.
I agree. I'm going through similar things, and there's no accident why they put the two of us together, considering we're both diplomats, so... Okay. Definitely, yeah. Huh?
Considering you're a daughter of Merlin, and I am an apprentice of Merlin.
Yeah.
Which is really weird. He's like, well, the first time I got there, he didn't want me, King Arthur, to meet one reason or another. He's like, King Arthur doesn't need to know that you're here right now. Because some reason or another, my bloodline is basically related to Arthur. Like, our cousin is Lancelot, I guess, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Which is weird. My mom, or my, are one of the first who faced it back, so.
That's a great. Well, you've been thoroughly fascinating, and I appreciate you contacting me. And everybody out there, folks, I think you've been noticing I'm starting to interview people that do not already have like a following or a real high profile. And the reason for this is there's a lot of information out there that is coming to the surface through so many of us that really need to be heard and acknowledged with the information we're carrying forth. And I just want to thank Shane because the one thing I really, really resonated with him was his humility is just awesome. He's not in his ego at all. And if you guys haven't noticed, the auric field around his video, it's been fascinating me the whole time. Anyway, Shane, I really appreciate you stepping up because I know this is not super comfortable for you, but you know, we all appreciate your information, and it gets us to be even that much more excited about where we're going, and we're not that far away, you know? So now if anybody wants to reach you, they'll reach you on Facebook, right?
Right. But make sure they personal message me before they do.
Make sure they what?
Personal message me.
Oh, okay. So you guys all heard that. So make sure you personal message him on Facebook and then he will respond. Other than that, though, go ahead and send the questions in to Galactic Connection. You can send that to admin@galacticconnection.com. And we will compile a bunch of questions for the next time that Shane and I hook up, and we'll try to share the answers to that, because it's just so much easier, Shane, for both of us, rather than piecemealing it. And for all of you, everybody's going to want to know the answers anyway.
Right.
So anyway, I want to thank everyone. Thank you for your patience and me not being able to hear super clearly. And we really hope you stay tuned. We're going to have some amazing interviews coming up here. I'm really starting to receive some help from volunteers, et cetera, and things are really starting to move much more easily for me, not wearing the hat of like 17 people. Stay tuned. As usual, check out our blog 365 days a year at galacticconnection.com/daily-blog. You can always see us there, as well as if you need any assistance, feel free to drop us a line at admin@galacticconnection.com. We love you. And as always, Galactic Connection and the entire team, including myself, we are here to serve you and humanity and holding the space for that amazing day when we truly can be where he's been in his dream time. Oh, my God. So I hope you enjoyed this as much as I did. And thanks again, Shane. You take care. Everyone, lots of love.